The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All righty, hour number two of our radio program. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Jordan Faison from the Notre Dame football team is going to join us coming up 20 minutes from now. Ben Lieber, Minnesota Vikings former linebacker, now part of their radio broadcast, is going to join us an hour from now. A whole lot more to do. Our poll question today, which you can always find on the good old cesspool of Twitter, X, at Zach Gelb, that's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. Which team impressed you the most this weekend in college football? Is it Ohio State, Texas, Notre Dame, or Penn State? Super early returns, 11% say Penn State, 14% say Texas, 21.3% do say Notre Dame, and then the overwhelming majority, 53.7%, they do rock and roll with Ohio State. We'll get to that answer of mine coming up in just a second. But, you know, I always think it's a good thing when you do a radio show that you're in the news and that you make news. I've always looked at that as a good thing. You got to entertain on the air during the 3-4 hours that you have to do the show. And then content that you provide to the listeners, I always think it's good to get the show's name out there when you provide content that is compelling enough and newsworthy enough to get picked up and written about in other places or talked about in other places. And I will say this, you know, not to just toot my own horn, but we provide a lot of content for other shows and for other writers to write about. But sometimes, like, things get written about where they're not taken exactly in context the right way. So, for example, we had Dan Lanning on the show last week, and this was the way that it was done properly. This website called Awful Announcing, which everyone's familiar with if you're in the media world. We had Dan Lanning on. Dan said, hey, I used to be interested in wanting to coach one day in the NFL. That's not the case anymore. I'm never leaving Oregon. Right? As long as they want me here, I will be here. He said something along those lines. So Awful Announcing, they take that clip, they reposted it, they gave us credit. That's really good. But I'm not upset with this one, but I laughed at it. A website called Browns Nation. So last week, I had a take about Myles Garrett, where I heard Myles Garrett speak to the media, and Myles Garrett basically said, I want to win, and I wanted to be here in Cleveland. I love Cleveland, but he talked about potentially having to go somewhere else, was basically the gist of his quote. So I gave a very clear and obvious take that, hey, if Myles Garrett actually wants to win, you're not going to win in Cleveland. You need to go elsewhere. You've already done the most winning one could do in Cleveland. You've in the past, you won a playoff game, right? So that's what I said. Now, when you're doing a 15-minute segment on one topic, right, there's an entertainment value part of it. And also with every radio show, there are jokes that have been made, whether it's on this show and on other shows on the network throughout the years, that there's a running bit. So I'm fully aware that when you're not in on the joke, sometimes you could hear something and the light bulb doesn't go off in your head because something you did wrong, besides you just didn't listen to the show. So I put out this clip on social media like we do as a repurposed material on this show and then put it out on social media. And the headline was, if Myles Garrett truly wants to win, then he needs to force a trade from the Cleveland Browns. But in that clip, you know, I said, and I'm the guy on the radio that says, here we go, Brownies, here we go, hoo, hoo. So this website, Browns Nation, I guess thought I was a massive Cleveland Browns fan. So I'll get to their writing in just a second. But for anyone that's not in on the joke, there was a few years ago when I was actually hosting, it was Eye on Football, right? The 8-hour show on the network where you go from stadium to stadium, stadium to stadium around the league. And you get all the highlights, you get all the touchdowns, you talk to players after the game. And I was sick. I was under the weather. Now, I showed up to work. I still did my job. I still talked for 8 hours. But I was under the weather, and I didn't have my normal Zach Gelb energy that day. So the Browns are winning, and I go, oh, let's go out to Cleveland. I think it was John Bazika who was our stringer at the time. And after he gave his report, I was like, oh, here we go, Brownies. Here we go. Woof, woof. So at the time, our morning show with Damon Amendola, at the time, the DA show, when he was there, DA was listening to Eye on Football, and, right, that's kind of healthy. This is not Shannon Sharp against Kirk Herbstreit. DA would play clips of us, we would play clips of them, and we'd all share a laugh. So that became a thing, and I even called the hotline when Mraz was producing that show. And I, you know, I started growling like I was a rabid dog or something like that. And I was going nuts. So that's always been, if you know, either the DA community or the Zach Gelb community, right? And you've been listening, whether it was CBS Sports Radio or the Infinity Sports Network, you get that joke. So I understand when some random guy who's just trying to get more clicks on his website, which is fine, and we appreciate the article, you know, write whatever you want. I've never really cared what you write. As long as you're writing, as long as you're talking about us, you want to say you love it, you want to say you hate it, I don't care. You got to have thick skin in order to do this job. But I did get a chuckle out of this article. So it says, analyst. I always love when they refer to me as an analyst. Analyst Zach Gelb effectively urged Garrett to leave in a recent video he shared on X. Quote, if you want to win, I would have said, hey, get out of Cleveland, and I'm someone that says on the radio, here we go, Brownies. Here we go. Hoo, hoo. But if you then also want to win and play after January, then you got to hit the road, Jack, Gelb said. Gelb might be a massive Browns fan and gets paid to talk about the team, but he also wants to be realistic. The team didn't instill much confidence this season, and unless they turn things around quickly, their Super Bowl window might not be open for the foreseeable future. In Gelb's mind, Garrett should get out while he still can, hoping to find better success with a new team. Yes, there we go. That was the infamous clip. So I always find it funny when an inside joke and a joke in a community then gets written about in a serious tone of nature. And there's someone that's sitting here reading Browns Nation, and they're saying, man, we have this national radio host in Zach Gelb who's a big Browns fan. And then they'll call me. They'll call me one day. Someone, I know you're a big Browns fan. I've been accused of being an Eagles fan. I've been accused of being a Cleveland Browns fan because I do the Here We Go Brownies, Here We Go. Eagles because when I lived in Philadelphia, I was the first voice on the air on 97.5 The Fanatic doing the post game after the Eagles won the Super Bowl. I get accused of being a lot of fans of teams that I don't even root for, fans of teams that I don't even root for. Now, I'm not anti-Cleveland Brown. I'm not anti-Philadelphia Eagles, but my teams, you know, we've been through this. I'm a Met fan. I'm a Patriot fan. I'm a Ranger fan. Those are my three teams, you know, when it comes to the professional sports. In college, it's a little complicated. I went to Temple, so I root for Temple. I also root for Michigan. I will support Nebraska football. Wherever Matt Rule goes, I will support just because of a relationship that I had with Matt at Temple University. So it's just kind of one of those things where I find it funny, Botcher, that now there's an article written about me, a whole article, and it's like even a Browns fan like that Zach Gelb is trying to get Myles Garrett out of Cleveland because he wants better for Myles Garrett. I'm a longtime fan of the Cleveland Browns. And I said, here we go again. It's the Cleveland Browns and it's 1st and 10. I'm a big Browns fan, Botcher.
It's a good thing. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
Because now they can't blame you for being a Patriots fan.
No, you're not wrong whatsoever. Alrighty. Let me give praise to someone that I don't like to give praise to. And I was very impressed by him this weekend. That was Ryan Day in Ohio State. Now, it's still championship or bust for Ryan Day in Ohio State. if they would have lost to Tennessee, I would have been the first one. I would have been the first one in front of a microphone the moment after that game, dancing on the grave of Ryan Day and saying, hey, he needs to be fired. I don't know if they would have fired him, but when you have all those Tennessee fans in your stadium, you just lost to Michigan 3 weeks ago, and you haven't beat Michigan in the last four times. If you would have lost the opening round with how much talent and how much money that you've spent on that talent on that roster, even though your record is impeccable when you just look at the record with no context, I still would have said he should have been fired. I don't know if he would have, though. But how do you stop a bad narrative? Well, with what you can control, when the ball is kicked off, you not only win, but you beat the living snot out of Tennessee. And I was most disappointed with Tennessee this weekend because I thought that was going to be the one game that definitely was going to be a good game. Even after seeing Texas, Clemson be ho-hum, Notre Dame, Indiana being boring, Penn State, SMU being boring, I was like, they got to give us one good game, right? And you had Ohio State, you had Tennessee, Ohio State. There was a big mental question going into this game. Tennessee with Samson, who got hurt early on, a very good defense on paper. You know what? When the Tennessee players came running onto the field with no shirts on, trying to say, oh, we don't give a rat's ass about the cold, usually I would say, oh, I'm going to pick against that team because you're trying too hard. But I was like, oh, boy, they don't fear Ohio State whatsoever. And then it was also all the videos, too, online where you had Rocky Top and all those fans being there. That looked like a Tennessee home game right before the ball was kicked off. Even Kirk Herbstreit said there was 40,000 fans. But Tennessee fans, that's what he guesstimated, that were in that stadium at Ohio Stadium. So I picked Tennessee to win a close one at the end of the week. I thought Tennessee was going to win. And hand up, I couldn't have been more wrong. Tennessee got absolutely dominated in that game. And Nico Iamaliava was fine running the football, did not do well passing. The Tennessee defense was absolutely abused. And Ohio State went through them like a hot knife through butter. And I credit the Ohio State coaching staff, who the biggest reason they lost the Michigan game was just pure arrogance. It was pure arrogance. It was so caught up in their minds and their cabezas. What Jim Harbaugh said about being born on third base, having a tough football team, just lining up in the trenches and running, that they forgot about Smith, they forgot about Ibuka, and then early on, it was just big throw after big throw to those two stellar, and I mean stellar wide receivers. So when you look at all the outcomes from this weekend, Ohio State beating up on Tennessee, Texas beating Clemson, Notre Dame also beating Indiana, Penn State beating SMU, I think it's clear and obvious when you look at the opponents that lost that Tennessee on paper was the best opponent. And for Tennessee to get just dismantled by Ohio State, and Ohio State, where it really could have gone the other way, wondering where they were going to be at mentally after just getting embarrassed by Michigan, even though the game was close, but Michigan can't even throw the football forward, and you still couldn't beat them. I didn't know, and I was uncertain, and I thought it was really 50-50 what Ohio State team was going to show up. But Ohio State this past weekend up against Tennessee, it's not a championship one yet because you're going up against Oregon, and I see the Ducks are an underdog, and I think that doesn't make any sense. But Ohio State had their moment where they showed you, okay, we play this way, we could win a national championship this year. Now let's see if they go get three more victories because you got to beat Oregon, and that is a national championship feel. Even if you beat Oregon, you have to take the winner of Texas and Arizona State, and then you get the four teams remaining in a championship game if you do get to a championship game, which is going to be the bottom part, which is Penn State, Boise State, and then Notre Dame and Georgia. One of those teams would be the team in the championship game. So it's a long ways to go still for Ohio State, but they took a big first step, and I mean a massive first step, with what they just did show over the weekend. And I love to dance in the grave of Ryan Day. He coached a very good game, and that's how he should have coached up against Michigan, but for whatever reason, he sees Michigan and he urinates down his leg. Now, if I had to order the most impressive teams from this weekend out of the four winners, right now the poll results say Ohio State's one at 53.9%, Notre Dame's two at 22%, Texas is three at 13.5%, and then Penn State is fourth at 10.6%. I understand They have three losses, but they did win the ACC in that conference championship game. I thought the next best opponent was actually Clemson. So how well-rounded Texas was, not that you'll walk away saying Texas is now definitely going to win the national championship game, but the way they ran the ball, had 200-yard rushers, and the interception wasn't his fault, but Quinn Ewers did a good job managing the game. I would say I was most impressed by Ohio State. Second most impressed this past weekend was Texas. After that, Notre Dame. Now, I went into this year with Notre Dame, you know, I can't say this year, into the college football playoff with Notre Dame. I was confident. I picked Notre Dame when we did the picks on Friday to go to the national championship game and to eventually lose to Oregon, I think by a score of 31-20 or something like that, I put out the prediction. And I've been saying Xavier Watts and Jeremiah Love. Those are the two I can't shut up about those two players. And we've had them both on the show, fun interviews, good conversations. And right out of the gate, Xavier Watts gets the interception, and then Jeremiah Love fires it upfield for a 98-yard touchdown. That was a complete performance by Notre Dame. Now, I never thought they were actually going to lose to Indiana, so the opponent does factor in. But Notre Dame could absolutely beat Georgia. And I'm picking them. I picked them on Friday to beat Georgia when they would get through. Why would I then not pick them coming up the rest of the week and lead into early next week, because that game is going to be on New Year's Day at 8:45 p.m. Eastern time. So I think, hey, I get it with Notre Dame. I've never been someone in the history of this network that has been a believer in Notre Dame, but this year I'm believing that Notre Dame could go beat a big-time opponent, and Georgia's a big-time opponent, even though Gunnar Stockton's going to be their starting quarterback. And then in at fourth was Penn State. At Penn State had a very good two pick sixes right out of the gate. Warren's a stud. Abdul Carter is phenomenal. But I never thought that they were going to lose to SMU, if I was being honest. So that's how I'd rank them 1 through 4, the teams that I were most impressed by this weekend. Ohio State 1, Texas 2, because I was down on Texas a little bit entering the playoff. Notre Dame 3, and then Penn State. What say you? 855-212-4227. 855-212-4227. Right now, when you answer those poll results on the question, 53.9% once again say Ohio State, 22% say Notre Dame, 13.5% say Texas, and 10.6% do say Penn State. We'll take a timeout, but before we take a timeout, let me just tell you that it's time to ask the pros. Where you, the listener, get to ask us a question brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simply tweet your question at INFSportsNet or at Zach Gelb using the hashtag AskThePros. Be listening later in the show. We might answer your question. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts. And we return on the Zach Gelb Show from the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. He's a national champion already in lacrosse. Scored 22 goals last year. Walked on the football team. Was their bowl game MVP. And now he just led the team in reception in the 12-team college football playoff, securing a victory for Notre Dame over Indiana. You'll have Notre Dame and Georgia coming up on New Year's Day. Jordan Faison will join us when we return in 5 minutes right here, only on The Zach Gelb
Show. You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
All righty, we continue. This is Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on the Infinity Sports Network. Let's hear a little bit about Jordan Faison right now. He's won a national championship with Notre Dame for lacrosse. Now he's trying to do so as well with the football team. And Jordan got off to a very strong start in the college football playoff, reeling in 7 catches for 89 yards plus a 43-yard trick kick return in a victory up against Indiana. Now the Fighting Irish on New Year's Day will be moving on, and they'll be going up against Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. And now joining us is Jordan Faison. Jordan, first off, congratulations. Appreciate you doing this. Thanks so much. And how you been?
I've been doing good. You know, had a good game up past days and, you know, been chilling.
Well, now going to a 12-team college football playoff, you know this, the first round, there are 4 home games to be played. That atmosphere on Friday evening to kick the whole thing off in South Bend just looked unbelievable. Kind of take me through your perspective of the atmosphere playing in it.
Yeah, it was definitely electric. You know, coming out of the tunnel to obviously the sound, and it was amazing. Seeing the field, everyone with the little rally towels, you know, we haven't had that before, and it was awesome to see. And then throughout the game, they were loud. You couldn't really hear yourself during the game. And that's what you want out of your home stadium. So it was awesome.
And it was loud to start, and it got even louder early on when Xavier Watts, one of the best defensive players in the country, had that interception, and then boom. What else can Jeremiah Love do at this stage with that 98-yard touchdown? That was really some sequence for you guys.
Right.
So let me ask you, on Friday night, when you guys end up going out there and playing in this game, just what kind of message do you guys think you sent with the way that you guys were able to take care of Indiana?
Yeah, we just wanted to show the entire world that we were able to play good football, and I feel like we did that. You know, we've worked week in, week out, preparing for this game, and you know, we went on there, showed it, and that's what we wanted to do.
You know, you look back at your season. I know that, right? It's Notre Dame. It's a national brand. Everyone watches you. But with what happened after A&M to NIU, a lot of people counted you guys out. When looking back at it, that game against Northern Illinois, you guys haven't lost the game since. Why didn't that game not break this team when it easily could have?
You know, I think having that loss kind of showed who we were. You see who people are at their lowest moments. And not breaking showed what we had, the potential we had. And, you know, the team came together. Practice that week was phenomenal after that. And, you know, having that loss kind of, you know, in our back pocket, I would say throttled us throughout the entire season. So I'd definitely say we needed that loss. And, you know, it was almost a blessing. And, yeah, we used that as a strength to keep moving forward.
And Jordan Faison here with us. Obviously, after that game, there was a lot of criticism directed the way of your quarterback. Clearly, with his back up against the wall, Riley Leonard has clearly grown this year and down the stretch at Notre Dame. Just what have you kind of seen change with him really over the last few weeks where he starts to get more and more respect around the country?
Yeah, we have a brotherhood over here at Notre Dame. You know, he's got our back. We got his back. We'll back him no matter what. You know, throughout this season, he's just only been progressing, you know. He's been working with everybody more, been playing better around everybody. And, you know, that's what you want. And, you know, with him leading us, you know, we play better around him. And that's all you could ask for is a guy that'll bring your whole team up with him.
Why was Indiana for you when you look at your individual performance, 7 catches for 89 yards, such a favorable matchup looking back at it?
You know, I was just able to, you know, throughout practice, we had our plays. We were dialing up plays and getting onto that field. It was kind of whatever opportunities come your way, make the most of them. Obviously I had the first ball I had was a drop, but not letting that alter me, I kind of, you know, kept playing the game. Whatever opportunity came to me, had to make the most of it, and I was able to do that.
And then coming out of halftime, you guys wanted to put the foot right back on the gas pedal, you know, going into that play on the flip to you, and then you had the 43-yard kick return. Kind of take us through that one, because that was a fun way that you guys really devised up that play.
Yeah, no, we had to practice that throughout the entire week, kind of had it set up. You know, we got our first kick return look, kind of saw it, thought it would work. And, you know, come out of halftime, Coach Biagi comes up. It's like, yeah, we're going to run the play. And I was like, all right, bet, let's go. Got onto the field. You know, it worked to perfection. So couldn't ask for anything more.
Jordan Faison here with us. Notre Dame off to round number two, where they'll be going up against Georgia on New Year's Day in the Sugar Bowl. I love your story, and I think your story is so cool. For people that don't know, right, you went to Notre Dame on a lacrosse scholarship. You had 22 goals. You won a national championship. You ended up walking on the football team last year, got a football scholarship, won the Sun Bowl MVP, and now you're in the college football playoff. Just kind of take us through that road that you've traveled and some of the work that goes in behind the scenes to get the production that we saw on Friday night.
Yeah, I would say it's definitely been a journey, man. This entire process from getting on campus Notre Dame to, you know, playing in my first games, you know, getting onto the lacrosse side of the ball, winning a championship. I mean, it's all just been a blessing, you know. Just takes hard work, dedication, you know, keeping my head down, being around my teammates boosting me, I boost them, kind of that back and forth relationship. And then I was able to, you know, take the opportunities I was given to make things happen. I was able to do it. Couldn't thank anybody more than God. And yeah, just being able to put things together and, you know, it's been an amazing ride.
Now, I've heard Coach Freeman say before, you've had football offers and you elected to go to Notre Dame for lacrosse. They have an exceptional program, and clearly you've made it work out on the football team, working your way up. Why was Notre Dame, looking back at it through the process, the right choice for you?
Yeah, at first, you know, I got recruited for lacrosse my junior year, so that was before football offers started coming in. But I had no idea about Notre Dame, didn't think anything much of them. They were my second visit. And then I got up here for a game. It was a Clemson game. And, you know, seeing all of that in its glory, it was just, you could not come to Notre Dame. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, the 4-for-40 kind of aspect of it with the school and then being able the possibility to play both sports, it was just, couldn't pass it up. And then, you know, nowhere else offered that.
Now, I'm not that familiar with the scholarship process, but you had a lacrosse scholarship. And then you eventually last year, early on in the football season, I think it was October, got a football scholarship. When you got that football scholarship and you were rewarded for that hard work, just what did it kind of mean to you?
It was definitely amazing. You know, I think my parents might have felt it a little more because they got to save a little bit of their money. But no, it was awesome. It showed the hard work that I put in paying off. And, you know, it was a blessing. I loved it.
How do you have the motor for this stuff? 22 goals in the lacrosse season. You win a national championship coming off a football season. And now you're right back in it in year number two for Notre Dame football, trying to win a national championship.
Yeah, I'd say just playing for the guys next to you, wanting to be great for them. Just allows you to go out there and perform the way you need to. And, that kind of vice versa relationship shows the same thing. And, that brotherhood we have here on both sports, football and lacrosse, just playing for that guy next to you, it just propels you and everybody else around you.
How does football help you with lacrosse, and how does lacrosse help you with football? Just wondering.
Yeah, obviously athletic piece, footwork and hand-eye coordination go back and forth. But the bigger piece, I would say, is, in lacrosse and football, you have a guy guarding you. I'd say you have DB in lacrosse and defender. DB in football and the defender in lacrosse. And you kind of going against that guy, then also looking back, reading defenses in football, like safeties coming at you or spinning. And then also in lacrosse, you got sliding defenders coming. So that kind of aspect, they both go hand in hand and they help tremendously in both.
So 22 goals in your first season in lacrosse. You win a national championship. You scored in the national championship game. When you look back at that experience, just what are still the memories? I know not that far removed from being able to do that right away.
Yeah, it was definitely surreal. In the moment, it didn't feel real after you won a national championship. But after you kind of go back and watch the videos, and it's just like dang, like we really did that. And, it kind of shows, obviously, all that hard work, throughout the long season, being able to put it together and kind of show the world the team we had and the players we had. And it was just an amazing feeling. Can't be beat.
You watch the game on Friday night. Clearly, we see what you're capable of as a football player. Like I mentioned, you won the Sun Bowl MVP also going back to last year in the bowl game. Where do you think you are on your trajectory of becoming a great football player?
I think still got a lot of work to do, obviously. But being able to show the world what I can do is definitely awesome feeling. But yeah, a lot more work to do over here.
You talked about it with the national championship, how you maybe not have realized in the moment, and then you see the videos. When you were walking off the field on Friday night, did you realize what you accomplished, or is it just kind of, hey, the job's not done yet, so you can't really appreciate it so far?
Yeah, same exact thing. You're walking off the field, it's like, we haven't done anything yet, so we still got to keep going.
So when you advance the page forward and you flip the page forward on New Year's Day, right, 8:45 p.m. Eastern time, you guys are going to be in New Orleans going up against Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. From afar, when you start the preparation, what stands out to you about Georgia?
Obviously, they're a hard-nosed team, great team, been a good team. It's going to be a good test for us, truly. We're ready for the, competition that lies ahead of us, and we're ready to work for it.
What do you guys want to prove, just wondering, in that game? Because there's still some people, when they talk about Notre Dame for like the last decade or so, they go, oh, it's a good program. Obviously, it's an iconic brand. But when you get to these bigger games, it hasn't fared well. Are you guys like hearing that noise? Do you hear a lot of that into the buildup for this Georgia game?
Yeah, you can't escape the noise. But we were kind of taught to tune out the noise. You obviously can't escape it. You'll see it everywhere. But tune out the noise and kind of work within our group, within our team, and kind of reach our full potential. And if we reach our full potential throughout the weeks of preparation, that'll show on game day. And that's what we want to do.
Last thing I'll ask you, Jordan Faison, his football team is going up against Georgia coming up on New Year's Day in the second round of the college football playoff. Coach Marcus Freeman, if you have to put it into words, what he means to you, how do you kind of do that?
Great guy, freaking great leader, role model, what you want to be as a player on the field and a man off the field, and someone we look up to and someone's going to lead us.
I appreciate you sharing your story. Thanks so much, and good luck moving forward the rest of the way.
Yep, thank you.
There he is, Jordan Faison from the Notre Dame football team, joining us to talk about his story. Really cool with what he did the other night and how he's improved as a football player the last 2 years, and clearly was brought to Notre Dame to be on the lacrosse team. And not only did he win a national championship and scored a goal in their national championship victory at 22 goals on the season, he's excelled in lacrosse and then the unexpected success excelling on the football field as well. And Notre Dame, if they get 3 more victories, he'll be able to say he's a national champion in football and also add that in with being a national championship lacrosse player as well. Pretty neat stuff. Okay, we'll take a break. Botcher's got some questions for me. I'll give you some answers when we come on back. We'll do a little onsides, offsides. Still to come, by the way, in about 27 or 28 minutes from now, Ben Lieber, former Vikings linebacker, now a part of their radio broadcast team. Vikings very much so in the news, as they're going to try to go get the number one seed in the NFC, things I did not have on my bingo card before the season did start. So when Ben joins us coming up in about a half hour, we will talk not only about the present-day Minnesota Vikings, but what the heck is going to happen in their future with them drafting J.J. McCarthy 10th overall in this past NFL draft, and then Sam Darnold having this breakout season and is about to hit free agency as well. Okay, we'll take a break. When we come on back, we'll do a little onside offside update time. Here is the Dex man, Dexter Henry.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show. Zach's taking on the most polarizing issues in sports. Which side of the line of scrimmage will he end up on?
Offside. Defense number 69.
It's Onsides, Offsides with Zach Gelb.
Alrighty, rocking and rolling, moving and grooving here on a Monday. We are off tomorrow and off Wednesday. Happy holidays to all, but we will be back on the air Thursday and Friday this week as we can continue to gear you up for the next round of the college football playoffs and get you closer and closer to week 17 in the NFL as we have week 16 wrapping up tonight. But first up, Botcher's got some questions. I'll hopefully give you some answers and hopefully you like what you hear. We call this segment Onside Offside and we get things going right now.
Okay, first question. In his first start for the struggling Kirk Cousins, Falcons rookie Michael Penix Jr. threw for 202 yards with no touchdowns and an interception, but Atlanta still blew out the Giants, of course, 34-7 thanks to two defensive touchdowns and two more scores by Bijan Robinson. Onside, offside, you were impressed by Michael Penix's debut?
Impressed. Impressed makes it seem like I was blown away and he was spectacular. I was encouraged. It's better than watching Kirk Cousins because there's more of a purpose because you know that Michael Penix Jr. can potentially be the guy there. Kirk Cousins had an expiration date. No one really thought that the expiration date was going to happen, though, this season. So, yeah, I lean more so on the side of I was impressed because they needed a win. He was competent at the quarterback position, and I'd much rather get the ball rolling with him starting now than doing it next season and you kind of have a spot where it may be too late already. But then with that being said, not only do you win, now you control your own destiny again because the Bucs dropped one last night up against the Dallas Cowboys. So having him there now and getting this experience I think is important. And we'll see if on Sunday Night Football he could beat the Commanders and then you finish off the season with the Panthers, who, by the way, Bryce Young keeps on playing better and better. So, I don't know, like, I don't love the word impressed, Botcher, because impressed means, like, oh, I love it, oh, it's wonderful, oh, my jaw was hitting the floor. It wasn't that, but yes. Was I satisfied with it? Sure, so I'll go on sides.
Next question. The Raiders were battling the Giants for the number one pick in the draft to select one of two coveted quarterbacks, Shedeur Sanders or Cam Ward. However, things went wrong as the Raiders beat the Jaguars yesterday and fell down from number two to number six.
Yeah.
After the game, reports indicated that Mark Davis was all smiles and players were happy and dancing.
Probably smoking those victory cigars again.
In Vegas, too. You know what's happening there. Onside, offside, the Raiders should still draft a quarterback in the first round if they miss out on Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders.
So that's where incompetent organizations make incompetent decisions. And I feel really bad for the Raiders fans yesterday. And I did talk to Stu, because I know three Raiders fans. Stevie Cohen, who used to run Sirius, tremendous dude, diehard Raiders fan. My buddy Michael Allen, who I went to school with, tremendous dude, big Raiders fan. And then one of my producer extraordinaires, the great Stu Kovacs, tremendous dude, big Raiders fan. And this was the text I sent to Stu. Even when the Raiders win, they lose. Because I understand grown men aren't going to sit there and go, we're tanking, we're tanking, we're tanking, we're tanking. That could be an organization decision where the general manager and the owner says, oh, we want to lose games and we're not going to field a good team, or, you know, someone gets hurt, we're not going to rush them back, and you don't put your team in the best position to win. But when you're going up against a dreadful team and you're a dreadful team as well, well, anything could happen. And the players, as long as they're on the field, because some of them are playing for their jobs next year, it's not as if players tank. I've always said that. Organizations tank. Players don't tank. But I don't love these quarterback prospects if you're not Shedeur Sanders, if you're not Cam Ward. You know, we were talking about Carson Beck. He's now hurt. We were talking about Jalen Milroe. I don't even know if Jalen Milroe is going to declare for the draft. So none of those guys that were in the third guy conversation, because it's clearly been... obviously, Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward. I'm not running and using a draft pick on Quinn Ewers in the first round. I think Dylan Gabriel's going to be a name, just like how Bo Nix. It's weird to say a guy that's played this many years in college football is a late bloomer. But in terms of the draft, Bo Nix did rise up the draft board higher than anyone could have thought. Maybe that happens with Dylan Gabriel as well. But if I'm the Raiders and I'm sitting there and I'm saying, okay, I can't get Shedeur Sanders, I can't get Cam Ward. If I'm the Raiders, I'll ask you this question. Would you rather have Sam Darnold or would you rather have Carson Beck? I'd rather have Sam Darnold. Would you rather have Sam Darnold or Jalen Milroe? I'd rather have Sam Darnold. Would you rather have Sam Darnold or draft Dylan Gabriel? I'd rather have Sam Darnold. So yes, the Raiders want to get their future quarterback through the draft. That would be priority number one. But if things don't go in their favor in the next 2 weeks, and hey, they could always trade up. You only fell down to six. The Patriots are two. Hey, Elliott Wolf, let's be wheeling and dealing Elliott Wolf. And you could have the Raiders pay an enormous price because they're going to be desperate for a quarterback. So that's a possibility. But your question was, the Raiders should still draft a QB in the first round if they miss out on Ward or Sanders. I would say that's a no for me, dog. I would go offside on that one because I really do think that you could use free agency and get a guy like Sam Darnold, who's better than whoever that guy is for the third quarterback in this draft, because this is not a deep quarterback draft like what we've seen in years past. I don't just draft a quarterback for the sake of drafting a quarterback. You got to fall in love with the quarterback. And outside of Ward and outside of Sanders, I'm not in love with any of these quarterbacks when you look at using a first round draft pick, especially a top 10 pick on those QBs.
What are you offside?
Okay, next up, Ben Johnson has been the hottest assistant name in the coaching circles for at least 2 years now, at least. And the Lions star OC continues to come up with creative plays. In yesterday's win over the Bears, Johnson reportedly made Jared Goff fake trip, and the team acted as the fumble occurred, prompting the defense to slow down and allow Jared Goff to throw a touchdown pass to Sam Laporta. Mm-hmm.
The whole sideline was yelling, fumble!
Fumble!
Because I heard that right away, because not that I had this extensive football career, but when you were playing like high school football and middle school football, whenever there was a fumble, they would tell you on the sidelines to scream fumble so everyone knows to go pounce on the football. So to use it to mock a fumble to get the other team to kind of be caught like a deer in headlights, like the Chicago Bears, I thought was a brilliant move.
So the question is, onside or offside, Ben Johnson will be the Bears head coach next season.
He is picky. And he's starting to get picky to a fault. You better be taking a job this year, Ben Johnson. Now, I could see the Jets getting Mike Vrabel. And I think I was asked this last week, will Mike Vrabel be coaching the Jets? And I said, no, he'll be coaching the Bears. And I even said, I'm going to vacillate on that about 100 times from now until they make a decision. So if I'm Ben Johnson, I would take the Bears job. I would. But I'm not Ben Johnson. And we all thought Ben Johnson was going to the Commanders last year, and he elected to pass in the Commanders. He keeps on talking about alignment. The Bears don't have good alignment with Ryan Poles there, the McCaskey family running the organization, and then Kevin Warren being the president. So I'm going to say Vrabel ends up getting that job, and I don't know where the heck Ben Johnson is going to be coaching next season. So Ben Johnson will be the head coach next season of the Bears. There's a chance, but right now I'm leaning a slight offside.
Offside!
Okay, trouble in New York as usual. More talk
death
about
taxes, trouble in New York for football.
While Aaron Rodgers' future is a question around the Jets, rumors are picking up about Garrett Wilson wanting out as well. First, Rich Cimini reported that he's hearing Wilson wants out, and then Wilson gave an I don't know answer to questions about his future with the team. Then yesterday, after pulling in 6 catches, 54 yards, he said this on SNY.
I don't know, to be honest with you, man. I don't know. I just got to go out and put my best foot forward and hope that things fall my way. You know, I would love to be involved, love to make an impact on the game, but people see it differently than, you know, that's out of my control.
So that was him speaking on his involvement in the offense. He did not have many targets in the first half. And very late, he got catches. So the question is, onside or offside, Garrett Wilson will be on another team in 2025.
So he's been in the league for 3 years. He's eligible for a contract extension. The Jets should give him that extension. But he doesn't sound like he wants to be back there. Maybe he's just fed up with Aaron Rodgers and fed up with losing. Because even though he never won a national championship at Ohio State, they did a lot of winning when he was at Ohio State. Whew. Here's what I still struggle with. Was him saying, I don't know, in terms of, hey, do you want to be back with this team? And then he went on to say a bunch of right things after that, but he started off with, I don't know, which I don't care what you say after that. Was that him starting contract negotiations of, I'm going to pretend like I don't want to be here, so you give me every last penny? Or was that truly he doesn't want to be there? That's the tricky part of this, trying to decipher through that. Because there's still 2 years left on this contract, and I think Garrett Wilson will want to be one of those good guys, even if he's making a bad guy decision. I don't fault him for leaving the Jets, to be clear. I still think he'll be on the Jets to start 2025. I don't know if he'll finish this contract. I don't know if he'll get a new extension or if he'll be on the Jets at the end of 2025. But will he be on another team in 2025? I'm going to take that in terms of to start the season. So therefore, I will say offside.
Offside.
Okay, the number 5 seed Texas Longhorns, who came into the playoffs third in the nation in yards allowed and second in points allowed, held on to beat Clemson 38-24, giving up over 400 yards to Dabo's Tigers. The Vols were 7th in nation in both those categories before getting smoked by Ryan Day and the Buckeyes for 473 yards and 42 points. Onside, offside, this weekend proved that the SEC is overrated.
So I don't think this is a banner year for the SEC, but overrated? Texas won the game. I thought they won the game by a bigger margin than what I thought it was going to be. And Tennessee got smacked by Ohio State. I don't love the bitching and complaining by Ole Miss, really Lane Kiffin this past weekend, but is the SEC overrated? It's not been a great year for them, but I don't think anyone walked into this playoff thinking Tennessee was going to run the table and Texas had a possibility of going to a championship game. You know, it's not inconceivable, but Georgia is their big team this year. And Georgia was obviously on a bye. We'll see what happens after Georgia goes up against Notre Dame. But to sit here right now and say the SEC is overrated, none of these conferences have been great this year. So I'm going to say offside on that one.
Offside.
And finally,
speaking of the Vols, freshman quarterback Nico Iamaleava.
Not bad.
I know, Iamaleava. It's not that bad. Had a brutal game throwing just 104 yards and no touchdowns, but had two scores on the ground. Iamaleava was the number 2 recruit in 2023, only behind Arch Manning, and had a solid season throwing for 2,600 yards, 19 touchdowns, and 5 picks. Onside, offside, Iamaleava will be the Heisman finalist next year.
So he'll be a hot name. I got to see more out of him with his accuracy throwing the football. He's 6'6". He could cut on a dime and stop on a dime and really be extremely athletic running the football. I didn't love his arm. I thought he was erratic at times this year. I would say it's more likely that Arch Manning is a finalist than Iamaleava, if I'm just throwing a quarterback names out there. I think Jeremiah Love at Notre Dame could also be a finalist. So I'm not ready to say, because this is what Tennessee does, have a good year, and then it's like, okay, can they repeat, have another good year? Or is it just going to be a little bit, they take a step back? There's a possibility, but right now to say that he'll be a Heisman Trophy finalist, I have not seen enough to be confident in that, and I will go offside on that.
Offside.
Alrighty, that will do it for Onside Offside on the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network as Tennessee got smashed by Ohio State. And that does lead us to our poll question today, which we will give you a quick update on right now before we get to Ben Lieber, who's going to join us coming up at the top of the hour. Which team impressed you the most this weekend in college football? Ohio State, Texas, Notre Dame, Penn State. Penn State at 10.4%, Texas at 13.9%, Notre Dame at 22.2%, and the Ohio State at 53.5%. Will he stay or will he go? What's going to happen with Sam Darnold after this season? We'll tap into that Minnesota Vikings locker room. Ben Lieber, former Vikings linebacker, now part of the radio broadcast. He'll join us next.